Bonsoir. How are you, dear friends? We are building the most inspiring and phenomenal communities of wine lovers. As we all know, wine is the catalyst of the greatest discussion. We'll be talking wine, but of course food, and everything that touches all our nation and senses. Bonjour, bonsoir, dear friends. Welcome to JCB Live. This is another very special happy hours. Aren't they all very special? But tonight, we're going to have a great conversation with one of the most amazing lady leader of more than 30 years in the world of wine. She's had extensive experiences on both coasts of America, worked for a wonderfully important Imco brand, then of course Robert Mondavi, and then entered the famous Wine Institute, which happens to be one of the most amazing organizations to promote the world of wine in the world. Nancy has written as well two great books, Food and Sustainability. So she understands it all, from the farm all the way to the glass, and of course to the table and to the plates. She's very charismatic, very charming, and I'm delighted because she's our first guest on the famous California Wine Month. We'll talk about that as well. To welcome the wonderful Nancy, I would like to open our bottle of JCB number 9 this time. Number 9 is coming. Hello, Nancy. Woo!
It's wonderful. Now, I have some of that here too. Can I pour myself a glass?
Of course, Nancy. How could we have a toast without the bubbles in our glass?
But I didn't want to open mine.
Nancy, I'm delighted to see you because the last time we had a wonderful toast on stage today in Vancouver promoting wine from California. So that's a great honor.
Cheers to that.
To that, to you, and to your incredible leadership.
Thank you so much.
Cheers, cheers.
Cheers.
So Nancy, you are the queen of California, of course. No one understands it better than you. What makes California so unique?
You know, I think for me, as you mentioned, I'm from the East Coast originally, but I've been out here longer, so I consider myself kind of an adopted Californian at this point. I think it's just the physical beauty of the place in some ways. You know, you have a sense of just the mountains and the coastline, and that translates to our food and wine. And it brings a sense of promise and possibility. You know, they think we're crazy a lot in a lot of the world, and we are, and in a good way. And that's what I love about it.
So how do you define craziness in California?
You know, I think it's just, I don't want to say anything goes, but kind of that idea is that we don't rein ourselves in by the fact that something's not tradition or it's not a possibility or it might be difficult to do. You know, we endure a lot and we also push the boundaries. And to me, that's just kind of the land of promise.
That's very true. And how does a state succeed for so long to push the envelope all the time and succeed so much? How do you culture, nature, this amazing spirits adventure?
You know, I think I look at it in the wine business, and you mentioned I worked with Robert Mondavi, and I think it's a sense of camaraderie and working together, certainly for the wine industry, and you know, coming from the French side, you may have an observation about that, but I think it's where we all, you know, if we succeed, we all succeed together. And of course, working for an association that represents California, that's what we do.
That's right. And Nancy, maybe I'd like to go for a few minutes on your incredible background and you. How did you get the interest to be in the wine world at the first place on the East Coast, you know, several decades ago?
Well, I developed an early interest in wine, and there were a lot of wine and cheese places were a big thing when I was in my early 20s. And then I had an opportunity for a job interview in this beautiful Georgian brownstone building in New York on 34th Street. And I loved the building and it was in wine. So I was hooked. And of course they had an incredible portfolio of French wines, Italian wines, champagne and so forth. And so it was just, it was a dream job.
So it was a coup de foudre.
Exactly. And
love at first sight.
So, and then I did come out here, and my background is as a writer. Originally, I was an advertising copywriter prior to getting into the wine business. So that's the communication side of things. I have my degree in marketing communications. And then I was interested in getting in the wine business, but I didn't quite know how. And I wrote to several people, and they said, oh, call the Wine Institute. They're looking for somebody. So I started at the Wine Institute, actually, as their director of communications. This was in the early 90s. And then I was recruited to Robert Mondavi to head up their public relations. And then when Bobby Cook took over the Wine Institute, he had some ideas about new possibilities. And I came back to join him to do that. And it's been a very, very exciting 17 years that I've been back at Wine Institute. So
exciting. Well, I'm going to raise my glass to this and maybe ask you to describe this lovely wine from California. As you could see, this is an homage to the state we love so much.
I think it's just beautiful. First of all, I think it's lovely that it's a tribute to your wedding day. So that makes it special.
Thank you.
I think it's got a beautiful, really floral nose. I taste, I hope I'm not wrong about this, but some Chardonnay in it. I just think it's just delicious. It's really got a lot of beautiful, just lusciousness, and of course, a nice yeasty finish, which is what I look for.
Very well said. Thank you. And there's still a good finish on the wedding. So, you know, as the wine is still good, the wedding is still going.
<That's right.
laughs> So, as I have a great wife who is a big inspiration as a woman in the wine world, how was it for you personally as a woman to really start in the wine world at the time, and how have you seen the evolution? Because you've been such a great success, and you are a fabulous inspiration for so many others today.
You know, we're a little different at the Wine Institute. One of the things that I love is that we get to work with people like you, you know, the principals, the owners of the winery. And so, again, I feel like it's a really collegial atmosphere. I think certainly there were a lot fewer women in leadership positions in the wine business, over the time when I first started in the business, certainly in the trade in general, and that's changed in a really positive way. But in general, I just feel it's a very welcoming industry, and I think there are continue to be great possibilities for women in
that's
every
right.
area of the business.
And it seems we've embraced so much more, and I've seen an enormous evolution in the U.S. specifically of so many ladies going from vineyards to winemaking to sales, and obviously marketing and PR. So it seems to be in every areas, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I look also at our team at Wine Institute, you know, our senior management team, more than half of the executives are women at this point, and I see more and more of our board members in the room as well. And so those are all really positive developments because, hey, we make up half of the population. We are major wine drinkers, so we need to work together, men and women, right?
And is it true? I understand you buy most of the wines too as ladies.
That's right. That's right.
Don't you think women taste better than men anyhow?
I think that's a proven fact, but you know, it depends. It depends. My husband is a very good taster. And for example, he has a great tolerance for corked wine. So he has very low tolerances. So sometimes he'll try to trick me and he'll put the wine there and say, what do you think of this wine?
That's right.
For a minute or two, I'll say,
And how do you trick him?
Oh, lots of different ways.
Well, maybe you'll share that secret later on with us.
I'll do that, yeah.
So, Nancy, you've written some amazing books. Would you want to briefly tell us about those?
Because I'd love to. And I'm sorry, I only have one of them here because I always give my copies away when people come over. But I should say I was a co-creator of the books. The actual writer was Janet Fletcher, wrote both of
yes.
the books. So I conceived and developed the book along with Allison Jordan, who is the head of the California Sustainable Wine Growing Alliance. And our first book was Down to Earth, and it was a seasonal tour of California sustainable wineries and really taking people behind the scenes to explain, you know, what does sustainability mean? What are the wineries and what are we doing in the wineries and vineyards each time of year to really ensure sustainability at every level? And we did have some recipes in that book because, of course, you have to have food when you have wine. And that was in 2011. Yes. And then last year we published Wine Country Table, California Sustainable Harvest, which profiles both vintners and growers. So, you know, we have 400 crops in addition to wine in California. So showcase these family farms and wineries and talked about their passion for what they do. And again, their sustainability. And this one has, we have 50 recipes in this that are broken up by region. So we're highlighting the specialties of all of those regions, whether it's figs or pears or, you know, along with the wines.
Well, I'm a big fan of this book. As you know, I was very fortunate to be one of the first one to see it, thanks to you, because we were actually together. Explain to all our friends with us today who really are all over the world, why is California so unique, not just for wine, but for all that California produces?
Well, again, I think it goes back to our climate and our landscape. You know, we have an 800-mile coast,
yeah,
and we have the ocean influence pretty much, you know, throughout the entire state, even in areas we're somewhat inland because of the fog that we have, because we create that fog, which, of course, is so critical to our wine production. But also we've got most of our state is covered with mountains. So we have mountains and valleys, and this really creates microclimates that are very unique and perfect for producing all kinds of, obviously, wine grapes around the state. We have them in every single county of California practically, but also all 400 other crops, as I said. And wow. I think it's more than the landscape, it's also the dedication. We've got a very long farming tradition in California. We have thousands of family farms, and they're carrying on a great tradition, and they are also innovating as well, so they can carry on that tradition.
On the sense of innovation, it seems that we finally moving stronger in the direction of sustainability, organic, and sometimes biodynamic farming. Can you tell us a little bit about this and if it's really accelerating and how lucky we are to have so many people believing in that philosophy?
Absolutely. Well, this is a program, the sustainability program that's part of Wine Institute and the California Association of Wine Grape Growers has actually been going on now for 2 decades. And it started with putting together a workbook that literally developed every best practice for sustainability in the vineyard, the winery, and the business. So that's the unique, that's what kind of differentiates sustainability, is that it's all of those areas. It's the community, the workers as well. Since that time, we've introduced certification of the vineyards or the wineries as well. And now we actually have a logo that you can have on the wine when the wine itself is from certified vineyards and produced in a certified winery. And in terms of progress, we now have over 90% of all the wine that's produced in California is produced in a certified California winery. And about 40% of the vineyards are certified to sustainability. And then if you add on organic and biodynamic to that, that increases as well. So there's no question, you know, this is, those numbers reflect people that have taken the time to certify and go through these programs, as I know you have. But this is really a philosophy that we embrace in California for a number of reasons. I think because our farmers, we are progressive as farmers in the wine industry, which is something I like. Yeah. And also we have to conserve water. We're in a very drought prone state, and mm-hmm. we have to really care for our land in order to be able to pass it on to generations, that we are a family business. So that's something that's at the really core of who we are.
For sure. Absolutely. And would we say that this sustainability approach is across the board in all farming practices now? Because we know in the wine world, it's obviously accelerating, which I'm thrilled to witness. What about in the almonds, in the walnuts, in the pistachios?
Yes, it really is being embraced. And again, for the same reasons that we mentioned, longevity of the business, the impacts of, you know, water shortages and so forth that we just need to deal with. So I think it is being widely embraced. And the other thing, Jean-Charles, to remember is in California, we started a very high bar environmentally to begin with, right? So yes. Our laws and regulations are already up here. So we're talking about, these practices go beyond that. You know, it's different than in other places of the world. And I hope, you know, we all get on the same board. And certainly it's our goal. You know, we do consider it a competitive advantage for California, but we want to see all of the wine in the world produced in this way.
Absolutely. Well, talking about the world of wine, I know you love rosé from the Provence. I've witnessed you drinking the south of France. Today, as it's a beautiful day of summer still, you know, we would love to share with you and have you tell us a little bit about the oldest winery in California, 1857 founded, really the beginning, Buena Vista, with a wine named Saint-Saul, which is very special, made in a rosé way. And why we selected Saint-Saul for you, because you're a very sophisticated wine drinker. You love the south of France, which is Grenache, Saint-Saul, and Syrah, typically, those three. So no one better than you to describe it. So cheers.
Cheers.
So I'll let you engage with everyone on your own description of it.
This just jumps out of the glass to me with its wonderful fruit, and I get sort of cherries and berries, and it's just luscious. I just think this is delicious, and I do love these wines, as you say. And speaking of Buena Vista, Jean-Charles, that's actually the first time we met. You were so kind. I think you had really just bought the winery, and you invited the staff of Wine Institute to come over and show us around. You hadn't even done any renovation yet. And you were walking us through kind of this construction site at the
Yes.
time. And I remember you went to close a shutter and it fell off.
That's right. Well, you know, like you, we believe promoting this beautiful state through history is essential. And I'd love to get your point of view on this, because as you were born and raised on the east side of the country, but moving west, as a Burgundy man, I feel it's always so important to talk about the past first and to talk about what has happened before us and why we're here today. What is your view of that, number one? And two, what is the future of the Wine Institute's communication on the history of California?
That's a really great question. And you're absolutely right. I think we tend not to, because we think we're competing with Europe, who has so many more centuries of tradition than us. We tend not to communicate a lot about our history, because we do consider ourselves known for our, as newcomers somewhat. But we do have a 250-year history of wine production in California. We've put together on our Facebook page and elsewhere our history of California. But in response to your question, we probably don't do as much as we should or could do to talk about the history. And I think maybe more than the competitive issue, I think it's a little bit because we feel like our history is still being written. And I guess that's true for all wine regions, but especially here. You know, we're just, if you were to talk about Pinot Noir 20 years ago, I think people would tell you, well, there's a few people doing it okay in California. Now we are absolutely at a pinnacle. So I think that's an element of it as well. But I do think history is important. And I do think it's going to be an area that we'll be focusing on more in the future.
Yeah, for sure. But you're absolutely right. We're writing the history of your future and the future. And I'm very, very impressed with what California has achieved. In fact, as you said, in such a short period of time, 250 years, we're still designing the maps of the future. We're still, defining the AVAs and the sub-AVAs and all of this. So I look forward, as I will still be around in a few hundred years, If we're doing enough of this, we'll live for a long time. So what other message would you want to tell us as far as what you're working on at the Wine Institute for people to really understand all the great work you're doing, besides obviously the environmental practices that you touched on and so forth?
Well, our main function is, the wine business is mainly small family businesses, as we've talked about, and it's really difficult for them to navigate. There are so many laws and regulations that impact pretty much every step of the business, from the vineyard to selling the wine to the final consumer. And we're there to really make that easy and to simplify that for our members and to give them the tools and resources so that they can concentrate on making wine and be very clear in what they have to do and what they can and cannot do. So that's part of what we do for sure. You mentioned sustainability, and that's a big part of our efforts as well. In addition, programs like California Wine Month that we mentioned at the outset, this is our 16th year.
Yes.
And we really, celebrating our annual harvest and really talking about fundamentally what makes California different and special and bringing that to the fore. We don't want to take that for granted, that people understand what we stand for as vintners, as growers, as people in the business. And so we really think it's important to put a really fine point on that and bring that to the fore. And we're so delighted that you are doing so much at your winery for California Wine Month in terms of these events. And we have great trade partners as well. We have more than 36 retailers, restaurants, and associations that are also participating. So it's that's a big part of our focus right now.
Well, congratulations. I think it's fantastic. And where do you see California in the next 30 to 50 years? And maybe where would you like to see it in terms of wine and agriculture?
Well, I'd like to see it continue to flourish, really. And I do think it's a very challenging environment for wine and agriculture right now. I think there's a lack of understanding of agriculture and what it really requires. Yeah. You know, people think it's, and it is, it's very sexy and fun to be at a winery, but, you know, part of that winery are the vineyards that surround it that make the wine and all that goes into that. So I would like to see really, and we work with a group called California Grown that represents California agriculture, really kind of see their goal is to make the farmers the rock stars. And I think vintners have been a bit of the rock stars, but I think I'd like to see that people really understand and embrace agriculture, even mm-hmm. if they're in the cities and don't really necessarily have a firsthand knowledge. And I think that's our responsibility too. I mean, it's our responsibility to explain that in a way that's interesting and understandable.
Now, you know the liquid very well. You're very much of a fantastic wine taster. I've had the opportunity to do so with you so many great times. What makes California wines at large so phenomenally unique versus France, Italy, Spain, and maybe the rest of the world?
Well, I think...
I know it's a big question.
I know it is a big question. So I'm going to answer it this way. I think it's, it's certainly the fact that we have the raw materials. You know, we've got the climate and the soil, and we've got the talent. There's no question about any of that. I think it's sort of the lack of restrictions, which is not to say that, that can be, some consider that a fault too, but we're not told that we can only grow this grape in this region, or that we have to make this one with a certain percentage in the blend. And I love French wine, so, you know, I think those rules work very well there. But I think that is what, you know, the wine that you drink is really the expression of that, the vintner in that region really doing the best they can. And I think that's what makes it interesting and complex and gives us so much to offer.
Very well said. To that note, we selected a wine for you that really, with Buena Vista, represents the history of America and the uniqueness of America, because Zinfandel was really brought to the U.S. by the Count of Buena Vista, as we know, in the late 1850s, early 1860s, and really has become the identity of what California can offer. No one else does it anymore. The Italians a little bit way back, but this is it. So I think this is a perfect wine to cheer on California as well.
It is, absolutely. Cheers.
So maybe why do you love Zin, and isn't it exciting to have a wine nobody else in the world makes?
It really is. And we are known around the world for our wonderful Zinfandels. What I like about Zin is all the different expressions of the style. And it kind of goes to the previous question you were asking about what makes California unique.
Yes.
My preference is for styles like this that I think are a little bit lighter.
Yes.
Forward, and it just, this is just beautiful. I think it's a wine that you can, have with all kinds of food, obviously a little bit richer food, right? Yeah. But also it's just delicious. I think it can be sophisticated, or it can just be really casual and very rustic. Yeah. And I just like that range. That makes it fun and interesting. I like to experiment and try a lot of different things. And so, you know, a Zinfandel is just a great palate for that.
I'm with you. I can imagine a pizza as much as a cassoulet. And going in the Southwest and have those great, spicy, rich, intense, you know, food. Yes. With a little bit of Piment of Espelette, and here we are. Now, what is your view on the strategic side of where we are going in terms of consumption of fine wines in the U.S. and bringing as well younger consumers into wine? and what shall we do about it?
Well, I think, you know, interestingly, our current situation of sort of having some limits in the COVID world right now about and having to move to virtual has, in a way, been a gift. It's been a silver lining of really having to meet consumers where they are, which is in social media. And so we have really stepped up, and I'm very proud of how the industry has done that. And I think we need to do more of that. I don't think we need to. I think the new generation will embrace wine. I think we need to make it fun and exciting and approachable for them, for those people that want that. But we don't want to lose what makes us special and interesting and really divine, you know, with food and really an elevated beverage. In my point of view, it's not something you just drink. It's an accompaniment to meals, and it adds something, at least to me.
No, for sure.
Right now. So I think the future is bright, but clearly we have work to do. We need to just really be able to show wine in a context of fun, but also something that you can enjoy moderately. And that is part of your lifestyle. And I think, again, we just have to really do that in a way, in formats that and places that we're going to find those young people. But I think they're coming along, and I think they will come along.
Yeah, for sure. I'm optimistic, as you are. What is your passion, my dear? Besides wine, Nancy, of course.
Well, I love to be learning new things all the time. And that's why my job in the wine industry, first of all, that's why I love the wine industry. It's the geography. Yeah. It's gastronomy. It's, you know, history. And so that keeps me. And of course, I have the issue side of it, the government side of it, right, at Wine Institute. So I like to learn things. And, you know, I think the other thing I've learned. So one of the things I've learned in the past decade is singing. I've been taking voice lessons. And I've been in plays, and I've done a few just small parts. And
can you give us a demonstration?
I knew
now?
You were going to ask that.
John Legend, our good friend, is probably watching, so he'd love to. To give you some opinion.
No, I will do that next time for you. But so that's one. And just started mountain biking recently. So, you know, just always doing new things. I like to, as I said, it drives my husband crazy because, you know, he likes to go to the restaurant that we really enjoyed so much. And we want to go back there because it's familiar. And I always want to go to a new place.
For sure. Yeah, so. Well, we'll have to wait for that. But I'm sure your home cooking with your multiple 400 recipes in your book will do it. You can last another full year.
Yeah, exactly. Well, better yet, my husband's a former chef, so he does all the cooking and I get to choose the recipes. So
that's great. So now, what about a dream that you would want to share that you'd like to see happen?
So a dream that I personally could activate then? I'll share that.
Sure.
So I feel like I would like to, and I'm actually seeking something to do in my life where I can contribute sort of beyond. I do feel that I contribute through my work. And I think, you know, I think the wine industry is a wonderful industry and I'm so proud to represent it. I think we bring a lot of joy and pleasure.
Yes.
But beyond that and beyond my family and my friends, I really would like to do something that can impact people. And I actually am pursuing doing life coaching where I can work with individuals to help them realize their dreams, whether it's in their career or their life. So that's kind of a next step I'm looking at right now.
And I would see you a natural at that and outstanding at that. You coached me very well when we were on stage in Vancouver together in front of hundreds of people. So Nancy, maybe a message that you would like to send to others. I mean, you're a phenomenal inspiration. You've done so much in your life, personally, professionally. You've done so much in the wine world, obviously. You're doing so much at the big level of the Wine Institute today. What message would you like to share within any context you choose? You could choose California Wine Month, or you could choose anything else in the time we live in to all our listeners.
Well, that's again a big question. Well, first of all, of course, for California Wine Month, toast with California wine. And if you are able to get out and visit a winery and tasting room and sit outside and just enjoy that beautiful place. But I guess I would say in a bigger message is just that I think that we all have so much possibility and we should dream and we should work to achieve those dreams because that's really all it takes. You just have to want to do it and do it.
And, I love it. Hey, this could not be said better. This is always my motto. If we dream it, we do it. Let's execute on it. And I'm so glad we're sharing that dream as well. So, Nancy, thank you for all what you're doing. I'm delighted that we could spend some time together, that all our viewers and friends can interact with you now and get to know you better, get the books, and obviously now be further more inspired by California. So to very soon, I hope, all my love, all my affection, and to your continued success.
Thank you so much. Same to you.
Thank you. Cheers.